Welcome to the 538 Politics Podcast. We broke the glass. We pulled the lever. Or is it a button? We're not sure whether it's a lever or a button. But here we are doing an emergency podcast around the growing and growing scandal surrounding National Security Advisor Mike Flynn, his resignation after he was caught lying to President Trump and the Vice President Mike Pence about his contact with the Russian ambassador, and now the swirling and growing allegations of contact between Russia and the Trump camp during the election and the transition and all the leaks and so on and so forth. And you realize how specific yet vague I was in describing that, because obviously by the time people hear this, there will be a million more details. But in these emergency podcast moments, it's just kind of grab whoever is around mode. So we have two people who maybe haven't done a podcast together since Model Talk.
Just Model Talk. Off the street.
It's the Model Talk reunion. Editor-in-chief Nate Silver. Hello, Nate.
Hey, guys.
And politics editor Micah Cohen.
I think the emergency pod should be a crank.
Oh, it's a crank.
You crank it up. You know.
Like an old-timey car.
Yeah, exactly.
And then it turns over. Yeah. I don't want to get too in the weeds of the latest news just because, as I said, it is moving so fast. But also I think, you know, what we have to add is we're not breaking news reporters. We're kind of trying to do analysis and context. Nate, Micah, on the site yesterday, you did a chat online, and you had a bit of a conversation about smoke versus fire. Classic question, smoke versus fire. So in the context of this story, generally, Nate, how do you go about parsing what's real in this story and what is more smoke and what to focus on and so forth?
I think that in general, my philosophy as a reader and as an editor is that a small bit of fire outweighs a lot of smoke. The Flynn story is not the most sensational or spectacular story ever alleged to have occurred in Donald Trump's orbit. He had a conversation with the Russian ambassador about sanctions and what the policy might be on that. You know, probably not a great thing to do, but not as salacious as other things you can imagine Trump doing or that he's been accused of doing, right? But because the story was reported out with a lot of specific detail, those facts became hard to rebut. You can't rebut a specific claim with a vague one usually, but if you refute it with specifics, then you can get caught into lies, and so it became the cover-up and not just the crime, right? Whereas this story on ties between the Trump campaign and Russia, only smoke. I mean, there's not even – I read the story three times. There's not
– This is the New York Times, last night, Tuesday night, reported that the FBI thinks – or intelligence officials thinks that there was continuous contact throughout the election.
But they don't know
the nature of it. They don't know the officials.
And they say in their paragraph that there had been no evidence of cooperation with respect to kind of hack the – or influence the election results, right? Yeah. So they're saying we have anonymous sources saying that there were contacts. We cannot tell you anything more about the nature of those contacts. To me – that did not move the ball very far versus what other news organizations had reported. The fact that everyone has such a strong reaction to it itself is kind of relevant because it suggests that we're in a feeding frenzy type of environment where, you know, news organizations are competing on the story. If you're someone who wants the story reported out, and that's great, right? You know, the Times also downplayed the Trump-Russia connections during the election itself. So that's very different. But to me, some of the stuff had already been reported or alleged elsewhere. And when I don't see anything to hang my hat on in terms of specifics or named sources, to me, it's still just in the range of allegations.
I wouldn't downplay the Flynn story, you know.
His conversation with the Russian ambassador and their negotiation around the mention of sanctions in that conversation.
Exactly.
And then his internal lying about it.
Yeah,
that's the story, just to clarify.
It does seem like a big deal to me if we have an incoming administration telling a foreign adversary in a lot of ways, don't worry about this, what the current administration is doing. You know, we're going to get in there soon. That does seem like a big deal. But I do think Nate's right that the specifics in this case made it much easier to latch onto. More than that, his resignation now puts everything surrounding it in a much, you know, in a much easier frame for the media. You know, it's not an admission of guilt, literally, but in some sense, the media treats it as the Trump administration saying, hey, there's fire here, right?
From a purely Machiavellian point of view, I wonder if the resignation was the right move. I mean, I don't know, right? Because there is a sense that Trump can be scratched but never really kind of pierced –
And here's a wound.
Right.
But let me just follow up on the Time story from last night, and then CNN had a similar story today about the sort of ongoing contacts between the Trump campaign and Russian intelligence officials. You know, maybe that doesn't move the ball that much, but it still does seem to me like it's all anonymous, but it seems pretty solid, the reporting that the people on the Trump campaign were talking to Russian officials. We don't know about what, right? But like, and it seems clear that there's no evidence yet that they were talking about manipulating the election. But what were they talking about?
Right. So, and I know that we said we weren't going to get too into the specifics because I think, you know, by the time tonight, there may be other pieces over. So taking us a bit of a step back, we've talked a lot on this show about what scandals kind of break through, why they break through. So why is this story, and you can dispute the premise, but why does it feel like at least that this particular story, of all the stories, as you said, Nate, is maybe causing this feeding frenzy and breaking through in some way?
Because the Flynn story was a specific and well-reported story that resulted in a specific consequence, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think if the story had been published absent the Flynn thing happening, it would not be what we were talking about today.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, the Russia stuff, if you want to call it that way, has been around. We've talked about it, you know, and it never kind of grabbed in whatever way. It never had that hook for the American public and then for lawmakers and so forth. For better or for worse, it never had that hook. Do we feel like it is hooky enough now?
Okay, but one reason why it didn't have that hook is
because
on October 31st, after Mother Jones and Slate had published stories alleging ties between the Trump campaign and Russia, they did a story saying, no, the FBI thinks this is all nonsense and very speculative,
right?
You know, I really religiously follow the news cycle and kind of we have to, as editors and reporters, kind of plan for which stories are going to blow up and not. That story had a really dampening effect on coverage of these connections because the stuff wasn't new. I mean, this had, you know, been alleged by Harry Reid back in August, I think, or July, that there were ties between Russia and the Trump campaign, right? You know, BuzzFeed published this dossier in January and other organizations reported on it, right? And I'm fascinated by the question of why certain stories blow up and why they don't. And I think what the Times and the Post and maybe the Journal, you know, and maybe CNN, but you know, kind of 2 to 5 big news organizations have to say about it play an incredible role in which stories the American public is discussing.
Micah?
Yeah, I don't really buy that. I think this blew up because it came right after Flynn. So, I mean, I think that explains most
so on of the Flynn resignation or firing, I guess we don't really know. I think
firing.
We'll call it firing. We were having a little bit of a discussion in the office about like trying to put this in context, and I know he wasn't technically a cabinet level official, but this is obviously kind of the earliest that an official of his stature had to leave an administration. I think it's safe to say this is a very rocky start to the administration. But does a move like this, Micah, from your sense of, you know, historical context or just, you know, the way politics works, does a move like this, getting rid of Flynn, does that potentially put a cap on this story, or does it put blood in the water and it just the floodgates open?
So it depends on the story. In this case, I think it puts blood in the water.
Yeah.
Because one, we were talking about this yesterday, but there are ongoing questions. So Flynn is talking to Russia. Was he freelancing or was he delivering an approved message, right? That's a big question. Who else knew, right? Trump apparently knew that Flynn had reportedly misled Pence and other officials in the administration for a few weeks now and had done nothing. So there's all these unanswered questions about it. But the other reason I think it furthers the story is what we were just talking about, which there are all these sort of adjacent storylines, Russian hacking, Russian, you know, communication, and it's sort of adjacent to those and gives those stories new stakes. You know, if it's a scandal where, I'm trying to think of a good example, but like, you know, think about like a cabinet nominee who didn't disclose some tax thing.
Hired an illegal nanny or something.
Exactly, right.
Yeah.
That kind of story, once the person bows out, it's over. What else is there to ask? There's nothing else
unless
to say.
There have been years of allegations about improper nanny conversations on the part of the administration or something.
And you know, like there was one in, you know, the Clinton administration nominee, you know, who bowed out. There was questions about, well, did she tell Zoe Baird? Did she tell the administration about these issues? But, like, it goes away, right? This story, I don't think, is in that category.
So, Nate, let's talk a little. What's next? Where is this going?
I mean, I assume that for some period of time, other news organizations will be fairly persistent in pursuing reporting on the story and asking questions about it, right? You know, to me, it's kind of a race between is there a bombshell somewhere in there that drops versus when the window for the story closes because something else happens or because there's a little bit of fatigue, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I have an article coming out later, but basically says you need two things to make a story really stick. One is you need specifics, and we have that on Flynn. We didn't have that in the other story. And you need persistence, even if you have specifics, right? People forget that these allegations about Trump groping women, the Boston Globe published a story with very good reporting on this in April of last year. It didn't blow up for 6 months because other news organizations weren't following up on it because, you know, it's a little mysterious why. It's one of those things where I feel like if you somehow randomized the world that there would be cases in which a story that's a huge story in one universe doesn't really come to the fore at all in another universe.
Well, it's very Trumpian. We've talked about this. If there's a million things going on, it's hard to
But I do think that's where he might be. I think he had strategies that were very effective in the primary campaign of distracting attention, were somewhat effective in the general election, but not always. I mean, he dwelled on stories like the Khan comments and the Access Hollywood tape. Those would persist for a week or two and actually affected his poll numbers quite a bit. When you're president, though, number one, you don't have another candidate to screw up with a deplorable story or email, even though those things were overblown, right? But you don't have another candidate to distract attention from you, right? And any moves you make carry a lot more weight because you're the president. So therefore, you're not nearly as nimble.
Micah, the Trump camp's response this morning, and I, as I try and do throughout the week, I try and listen to a lot of conservative talk radio, and a lot of the conversation there is focusing on the leaks and the fact that there are all these leaks. And that's Trump's response is, why is the intelligence community leaking this information? Why is our government kind of acting against itself? So is that a legit question? I mean, I think, there's part of me that thinks it's a legit question to ask, why the hell are all these anonymous sources talking to everyone seemingly at all times about everything?
So I think it's a totally legit question. Can I just say, though, what will determine sort of how long the window on this story is? I think a big factor in that is what do Senate and House Republicans do?
Yeah.
Right? There's the Senate Intelligence Committee is making noise about investigating this. But if they investigate it, it'll all be behind closed doors, right? That's still something, right? If everything is Republican-led. So if they investigate this, that sort of extends the story, potentially brings new details to light, things will get leaked, right? If somehow Republicans, accede to appointing a special select committee to investigate it, that's public, right? So that would sort of raise the profile of the story on an ongoing basis. And if, the Senate Democrats are asking Sessions to recuse himself from this, if somehow the administration is persuaded to appoint a special prosecutor, then that's a whole nother level. But sorry.
No, that's fine. And I want to get back to that too, but yes, on this leak question.
So I think it's a totally legitimate question. There are a ton of leaks happening from basically every agency within the administration, from Congress. You know, it does feel a little bit like different arms and legs of the executive branch are acting against the president.
I think it's each individual finger
right,
at this
each
point.
Now, you also have to – so that's a legitimate question. You also have to ask yourself, why is that happening?
Yeah.
And it seems like the answer to that question is, well, there are real fundamental questions about Trump and Trump's behavior in a democratic society and whether Trump is undermining the democratic small d system, right? But at a first glance, I think it's totally fair to be like, is this really how we want our government functioning? I mean, it's weird for someone in the press to say that. We love leaks. But it does seem a little crazy.
Yeah. I mean, when we went through the various scenarios of how the Trump president could unfold, one of them was that you have a revolt from what's called the deep state or the military-industrial complex, and you sound kind of paranoid when you talk about it in those terms. But the executive branch has what, tens of thousands of people or millions of people, depending on how you count. If those people aren't on board with the executive himself, that executive might become quite neutered. And we hadn't really had a test of that in the American system before. And so I agree with Micah that that is one of those, one of the most important stories coming out of the first month of the presidency is the internal resistance to Trump. Whether you feel as though the leaks are ethical or not, I think I tend to think mostly they are. I'm not sure, right? You know, doesn't negate the fact that if there were more trust in the president, that this might not be happening.
Yeah, and I mean, it also brings to mind the fact that part of this story, again, we don't know all the details, but it's potentially that, like, Trump knew about stuff from Flynn for weeks before he told Mike Pence, and Mike Pence is being kept out of the loop. So it just goes to sort of reinforce this larger notion of a organization that is not running very smoothly.
What someone on Twitter was like, you know, Mike Pence was like when Frank Underwood in House of Cards was kind of grinning at the camera, right? I want to know what he's thinking, you know, because he obviously lurking in the background of all of this is the possibility that Trump at some point would undergo an impeachment proceeding or resign, right? And so, you know,
we're going to have that conversation maybe on next week's show, where we'll get there. Can I just say one thing about the leaks, though? The kind of my Trump's response to it and the Trump camp's response to it. There are two things about it that sort of gnawed at me. One is to call the leakers un-American, and he said it basically at his inauguration as well. Basically, like, if you're not with me, you're not a patriot, and you're not an American, and that is really not what you want from our government. That's not the way that this country works. But I will also say that his specific argument about the intelligence community is leaking all of this classified information and saying that on the one hand, and why is this happening? And then turning around and saying, oh, by the way, all this information is fake news and not true. I don't know if you can square those two.
Well,
the food is terrible and the portions are so small.
I don't know. So I think you can square those. And just in the sense of, I mean, this goes
like
back.
The intelligence community is making up stuff to undermine me? Is that his argument?
So fake news is definitely the wrong term. But I do think it is the case. I mean, this was the case with all the Russia stories that, as Nate said, the executive branch is huge. The FBI is huge, right? The CIA is huge, NSA. So we are getting a bunch of leaks from different leaks, right? Yeah. So it's like one group of FBI agents say there's nothing to these Trump-Russia connections. That's the story Nate referenced that ran before the election, right? But another group of CIA people or FBI people say, actually, there's something here, blah, blah, blah. It just raises the bar for the news consumer, I think, to think about, is this anonymous? What are the motivations for the people leaking this? It makes it much harder to figure out what's smoke and what's fire, basically.
Yeah. So let's end on what you mentioned a little bit, Micah, but talking about what comes next. So throughout the Trump presidency, all, 34 days of it?
It'll be 30. It'll be a month on the 20th.
I want to do a poll, actually, of people. How long do you think Trump's been president? And see what the range of answers
five
are.
5 years.
But throughout the Trump presidency, we've talked about how the real resistance to Trump in terms of, like, actually changing the nature of his administration is going to have to come from the GOP because of just they have the majority in both houses. So do you want to elaborate on your thoughts earlier about pressure that you see being exerted on GOP, what the different fault lines are, and kind of what signs to watch for next in terms of, maybe, you know, there's some real stuff about to happen?
I am very hesitant. So, the starting place for all these conversations, I think, should be congressional Republicans will protect or at least not try to investigate / hurt the Trump administration. I think all actions during the campaign suggest that. I mean, we saw Republican officials unendorse Trump, criticize Trump in really harsh terms, and then, like, the next day endorse him again. So that's my starting place. That said, there have been rumblings from McCain, from Roy Blunt, from the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Richard Burr, that they do want to look into this, right? The big thing to watch for, as I kind of jumped the gun on this, the big thing to watch for is what is the form that investigation takes. There's a form it takes where it's just on the committee level, where it's all done behind closed doors, where it's somewhat pro forma, right? And then there's a form it takes where it's pretty hard-hitting, where they bring Flynn in, where it's public. And, you know, where the investigation falls on that spectrum, I think will go a long ways towards determining the kind of life cycle of this story and what comes to light.
Nate, does this story, a story like this, at all embolden the resistance to Trump, either from Republicans or Democrats, along other lines? Meaning, does chaos around this with the Trump administration mean that maybe Democrats and some more moderate Republicans are more willing to stand up to some cabinet picks or to ACA repeal or some other things? I mean, you talked about this a little bit about an administration fighting a bunch of small wars can't really focus on one
look,
thing.
Look, I think one casualty of this could be their attempts to repeal the ACA, just because we know from experience it takes a lot of political capital, because it's a multidimensional issue. You don't necessarily have Republicans who want not a majority for a straight repeal, but none of the replacement plans are all that popular either. That's a really difficult nut to crack. And if Trump is distracted and unpopular, right, then, I mean, that's a really hard thing to do under the best of circumstances. But yeah, in the long-term background here, I mean, the 28 midterms loom a little bit. And do Republicans feel like, does the median voter who's unsure about the Trump versus Russia stuff nonetheless want there to be an investigation? On the flip side of that, you know, at some point having too much smoke without fire can hurt the credibility of people arguing against Trump, right? Or let's say that there's something else that happens that doesn't involve Russia, that's a severe scandal 6 months from now, and the reporting on Russia feels like it never really kind of came to anything. I mean, that can have effects too, potentially. So, but look, we're I think Mike and I agree that, like, we're in a very interesting and volatile time right now, right? Ranging from when we do the podcast on Monday, we're talking about, oh my God, this amazing bombshell happened, the Post, the Times released something, let's talk about impeachment, to, yeah, the story was a nothing burger, and why was everyone so freaked out last week? I mean, it's a really wide range of outcomes, but I think we'll learn more in the coming days, because there is a shelf life. I mean, you know, we know that, roughly speaking, without new fuel to the fire, that a story will burn out usually after 3 to 5 days.
And Trump also knows this, right? And he knows how to shift the argument. He tries, I think, intentionally to sort of sow a little bit of chaos and so forth. So I'm actually really interested in Trump's reaction in this moment, where if he decides to move from being on the defensive and fighting these particular allegations to maybe trying something big to shift the conversation. And we've seen that when he's done that, you know, through executive orders or through other things throughout the campaign, that sometimes that creates its own chaos of its own.
Yeah, I think that's right. Although I do agree, I think, Nader, you said it earlier, that he's been less successful doing that president. But it's still possible, right? Like, how often do you hear people talk about conflicts of interest anymore?
Or his groping allegedly women.
Right.
Right. I mean, that was
but
a
I'm
huge
talking
story.
About, like, you know, is the Trump administration saying we need a big, bold action? Like, we need to sign an executive order that builds the wall tomorrow, or an executive order that doubles down on the immigration executive order, you know, reworks it tomorrow.
But see, this
or
is
something
where,
like that, that's a
you can
big
have,
reaction, and then it's not rolled out in all the ways, the problematic ways that we saw.
In the campaign, you can arrange Chris Christie to surprisingly endorse you, right? You know, good theatrics. If they were to do something, a rushed executive order, let's be frank, right? One way to distract attention is to create some conflict with an enemy of America somewhere. I mean, those are really bold actions. And if you already have two problems or so, right, maybe one of them kind of halfway goes away, but you create a new problem for yourself. Yeah. There are costs to switching between different, you know, I don't know. If I were Trump, I mean, first of all, I would probably have fired most of my PR people, given how things are going so far, right? My line on the Times story might be like, look, there's no details here. This is anonymous reporting. This stuff's been reported before, right? And when there are specific allegations, we'll take action as we did to Michael Flynn, right? It doesn't seem that hard to navigate this, which is why I think this notion that he's always playing 12-dimensional chess is a little bit flawed.
Yeah,
but
at
the same time, I do think people underrate how much stories can burn out of their own volition unless there is conscious and deliberate effort by the press to say, we're going to focus on this topic.
Final thought, Mike?
The one thing I'd say is, it does seem pretty safe to say right now, I think, tell me if you guys disagree with this, that the Trump campaign was communicating with Russian officials, knowingly or unknowingly, during the campaign, right? they know what was in those communications. We don't. But the FBI presumably does. That Time story was like, you know, FBI officials would not disclose what was said, who was talking beyond Manafort. But they know what was in those officials. So the Trump administration is working with more information than we are. So it'll be interesting. One thing I'm watching for and how they respond is trying to figure out, can we infer anything about what they know based on how they respond?
So let's play that game a little
bit. Every reporter has to be a spy these days and play this like prisoner's dilemma.
Let's say there was something really bad that Trump himself was in a, you know, on a phone call with WikiLeaks and Vladimir Putin, and they're like, let's hack Clinton's emails, right? Like,
if there's something that publicly.
But what right. there's something really bad, like right. how would they behave?
Well, I guess that's my point is, so far, I brought this up yesterday, but so far, their strategy has been, you know, Julia Yaffe was used this term, whataboutism, which is from Russian propaganda, but it's basically like when Russia would be criticized, they'd be like, well, the United States does X, Y, or Z, right? And so far, I'm not really using this term right, but so far, that's been the Trump's administration strategy is to say, what about these leaks, right?
Right.
I think if they felt – this is total speculation. But I think if they felt really confident in the story, in the Russia story, they would do what Nate said, which is to say this is all based on anonymous sourcing. The media is
– this is going nowhere.
This is going nowhere, right? As opposed to saying, no, look over there. This is really simplistic. But to a certain extent, if they're saying, don't look here, maybe there is something there.
Yeah. Okay. Nate, final thought, or should we just wrap?
No,
because
I think
we're really kind of in speculative territory here.
Well, but we're left to sure. You know, a little bit of fire goes a long way.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So we will continue to watch for the fire and maybe try and brush away the smoke. Nate Silver, editor in chief, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Mike Cohen, politics editor, thanks to you.
Thank you.
Thanks to everyone for listening to our emergency podcast. We'll be back on Thursday with our latest episode of our Party Time series, looking at the future of the parties. And then we will be back next week on Tuesday, because we're taking President's Day off next week on Tuesday, with the latest 538 regular politics podcast. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you soon.